Well, even though you've already heard me speak, good morning. It is great to be here with all of you. You know, actually, I don't know, most of you don't know this, but I've actually worshipped here before, twice. I was a secret worshiper sitting kind of back where you are back there in the last pew. I've been coming out here for years because my mother, Wawa Ingersoll, lives literally like about 7 blocks up the road. And so we just have come by this church forever. And so in the summers, several times, when I've been here out visiting with my family, I've come to church here. Actually, every time I came, you were on vacation. I've just always driven by here. It's such a beautiful church. And when I did come and worship, I didn't necessarily make myself the friendliest person because I had shorts on and a shirt and I sat in the back, but I really enjoyed being here. I will also add, there's another reason why I really enjoyed being here. One of the things, as Patrick mentioned, I was at my church, Calvin Presbyterian Church in Zelianople, for 22 years. And one of the reasons I was there for 22 years is that it was a church that was very spiritually open and very spiritually deep and just continued to grow and to be vibrant the whole time I was there. And it was actually really, really difficult to leave. I felt called to become the executive director at Samaritan Counseling, Guidance, and Consulting, mainly also because I wanted to do one-on-one work with pastors on helping turn churches around by helping pastors become healthier leaders. And over the course of the past 18 years, I've had the opportunity to travel all over North America to different places to give talks about transforming churches by rekindling a spiritual foundation. And the thing that I've really discovered is the churches that are willing to do this, they end up creating a vibrancy that is going against the grain of churches in the Presbyterian Church, USA, and other mainline churches. You all know this. Our denomination is kind of declining. And yet there are pockets all over North America in places like Nova Scotia and Calgary and in Salem, Oregon, and in McMinnville, Texas, and in all sorts of places in Flint, Michigan and all, where I've seen congregations that have said, we want to take spirituality and discernment and prayer seriously, like your church has. And I've seen the difference, and they're not the churches everyone else notices. People look at bigger churches or fancier churches or whatever. That's what everyone else notices. But what God really notices is that churches, regardless of their size, regardless of how they look, they actually say, we want to follow you. And so for me, this is really exciting because I got to teach Patrick this summer. And, I really enjoy teaching doctorate ministry classes, but I especially enjoy teaching doctorate ministry classes with students who already get this stuff and already understand it. And that's the way Patrick was. And so I actually had a great, very small class, but had a great time with them. And so for me, it's not only wonderful to be here with you, Patrick, but just to be here with all of you for a whole variety of reasons. And for those of you, by the way, who know my brother, I'm really glad you know my brother. I don't know whether I should be apologizing for him or be glad for you, because he's a wonderful, smart, loyal guy who's also very interesting. Does that sound right? There you go.
That would work?
Yes. Let me share with you now our word of Scripture. Our passage for this morning comes from the Gospel of John. It's from chapter 15, verses 1 through 11, and we hear Jesus in it. He's in the middle of a very long series of talks. It's during the Last Supper in the upper room. He's gathered everyone together, and actually, this is a long talk that Jesus begins with chapter 13 and finishes in chapter 17. And to me, this is the core of what he's saying when he says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear even more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Now, the passage says, abide in me, and I actually don't like that word because it's not really accurate to the Greek. The Greek actually is a more vibrant word. It says live instead of abide. So I'm going to change it a little bit. It says, you have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Live in me as I live in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it lives in the vine, neither can you unless you live in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who live in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing. Whoever does not live in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you live in me and my words live in you, ask for whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Live in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will live in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and live in his love. I said these things to you so that my joy may be complete in you, and that your joy may be complete. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You know, I chose this passage this morning because I actually just love to preach on this passage. I love this passage. To me, this is a passage that's the key to understanding Christian spiritual life. The Christian spiritual life isn't about what form of prayer we use. The Christian spiritual life isn't about what practice we do. The Christian spiritual life is about to what extent are we alive in Christ and Christ alive in us. Actually, I love this passage so much, I even wrote a song about it, which you're going to get to sing right whenever I'm done 45 minutes from now. Actually, yeah, I'm kidding. It's going to be an hour, but I set your expectations too high. Actually, all of John's Gospel is my favorite because it's the Bible's book of spirituality. I have come over and over and over and read John's Gospel. And the more I read it, the more depth I find. But you know, one of the problems is that John's Gospel is not most people's favorite gospel. And there's actually a reason why it's not people's favorite gospel. See, people like Matthew, Mark, and Luke, because those are really just a collection of short stories. They're just short events about Jesus. And even if you listen to Jesus or read about Jesus' teachings in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're really quick. It's one parable over here, or it's one little phrase over there. Or you get the Sermon on the Mount, which is kind of little blips of content. Do this, think this way, be this way, whatever. John's Gospel's much harder. John's Gospel doesn't tell the story as well as the others. What John's Gospel does is it collects Jesus' teachings and has Jesus teaching us. The chapters 13 through 18 are long chapters, and a lot of people bail out before they dig into it. And, you know, there's complaints about it. John's Gospel is not as easy to read. Jesus talks too much in John's Gospel, because he does. I mean, he doesn't take a breath from chapter 13 to chapter 18. But here's the thing. This is what John's Gospel has that the others don't. Jesus goes into depth. He tells us deeper things than we get from even the other gospels. And it's that that makes it my favorite book. But I have to tell you, I didn't see these things about John right off the bat. When I was in seminary, the way we learned Greek, I don't know how you learned it, we had to learn it by translating John. Is that the way we learned it? You know, basically, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and all things came into being through him. We had to just spend weeks and months translating that. So to me, John was actually quite painful, because I had to do it in another language. But what happened to me was, when I was working on my PhD at Duquesne in spiritual formation, I came across a book by a man named Thomas Kelly. How many of you have ever heard of Thomas Kelly? not very many of you. He actually was from Philadelphia. He taught at Haverford College. He was a Quaker, and he was a brilliant man, just an absolutely brilliant man that no one really knew because he was a deeply humble man. In the last 3 years of his life, between 1938 and 1941, he gave a series of lectures to the different Friends fellowships around the Philadelphia area. He did them in Morgantown, he did them in Germantown, he did them all over the place. And then in 1941, he died at age 47, had a heart attack. Interesting experience. He woke up, told his wife that this was going to be the best day he's ever had, and he died at lunchtime. I'll let you interpret that. But when I was at Duquesne, one of the first books I read was A Testament of Devotion. What happened was, when Thomas Kelly died, people who knew him at Haverford College, people who knew him in the Quakers Fellowship, basically said, these are some of the deepest things we have ever heard. And so they collected all those talks and turned it into this book called A Testament of Devotion. And it's a book that, you know, since came out in 1948, it's actually been sold every year. Thousands and thousands of copies of this book get sold because of the depth of what this man said. And in the very opening chapter of that book, the very first page, he says something that really hit me. And it's the thing that made me fall in love with the Gospel of John. He says, and I'll read slowly, because I know it's hard when people, it is actually hard to hear when people are reading a quote. Deep within us all, there is an amazing inner sanctuary of the soul. A holy place, a divine center, a speaking voice to which we may continuously turn. Eternity is at our hearts, pressing upon our time-torn lives, warming us with intimations of an astounding destiny, calling us home unto itself. Yielding to these persuasions, gladly committing ourselves in body and soul, utterly and completely, to the light within is the beginning of true life. Yielding to these persuasions, utterly and completely to the light within is the beginning of true life. It is a dynamic center, a creative life that presses to birth within us. It is a light within which illumines the face of God and casts new shadows and new glories upon the face of people. It is a seed stirring to life if we do not choke it. It is the Shekinah of the soul. Shekinah is a Hebrew word that means God's presence. It is the presence in the midst. And this is what I really love, this last sentence. Here is the slumbering Christ stirring to be awakened, to become the soul we clothe in earthly form and action. And he is within us all. This is what John's Gospel talks about. Christ says, I am in the Father. The Father is in me. I am in you. You are in me. This is the vine and the branches. You are connected to me. Apart from me, you could do nothing. But if you are grafted to me, you can do everything. This is the core of the spiritual life. It's why I'm so in love with John's Gospel. And this morning's passage, it's a perfect example of what Thomas Kelly is talking about. You see, the reason why I am so in love with John's Gospels is that the other Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they tell you about the withness of Jesus. In other words, Jesus was with these people. Jesus was with these people. Jesus was with the disciples. Jesus was with the ill. Jesus was with the hungry, the hurting. John's Gospel tells us about the within-ness of Jesus, of Christ being within us. That's what Thomas Kelly is talking about. Here is the slumbering Christ stirring to be awakened, to become the soul we clothe in earthly form and action. And he is within us all. This passage is the center with Jesus using a well-known metaphor. Actually, what you don't know, when Jesus talked about the vine and the branches, they heard way more than we do when we hear that passage. And the reason why is he lived in an agricultural culture. But also, everybody then drank wine. I don't know if you know this, but back in Jesus' day, they never drank water. Do you know why? It made people sick. I didn't really realize this until I read a book on the pilgrims. My last name is Standish. It makes sense to read about the pilgrims. And I found out that the pilgrims, they never drank water either. They just drank beer. And they went through a crisis when they ran out of beer in that first year. And they had to drink out of a creek. And all of a sudden, they all felt really good. And they couldn't figure out what was going on. They just figured it was God saying, this is where we're supposed to be. Well, back in Jesus' day, the water was bad. And so in every household, they would keep kind of a jar of wine. But the wine wasn't like the wine we drank at the from the liquor store down there or over there. It was more like a thick syrup. And what you would do is you would pour it into another container and you would mix water with it. And the alcohol would kill the germs. And so even little kids drank wine. It was highly diluted, but they drank it. But people understood. They saw wine as essential. But when he used the metaphor, they also understood stuff about this. For example, do you know where the best wine grapes grow? They don't grow here in Pennsylvania, regardless of how much you might like Chad's Ford Winery or Pennsylvania wines. Good wines don't grow in Pennsylvania. Where do they grow? California? Where?
Dry areas.
Dry areas, yeah. California, Australia, southern France, Italy, Greece, all of those kinds of areas. Because what happens is there's not enough water and the roots dig deep. They can go down 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 feet down looking for water. And that's what makes them grow. They go into depth. And actually, you have to actually clip off a little bit of the branches in order to help them bear fruit. Because actually, grapes, to do really well, have to be stressed. There's a metaphor right there for you in this passage. How many of you have experienced God during easy times? How many of you experience God during difficult times? It's during the difficult times, when the roots have to dig deeper, that you experience God. But Jesus is telling them, look, I'm the vine. I'm the thing that digs down. I'm the one who digs down into the spiritual water that can just flow through you. I'm the vine. You're the branch. You're the one that bears fruit. I'm the one who digs down and keeps us connected to what the Father wants. Okay, so now that I've given you all a lesson on wine growing, and this has been, I'm a doctor, so I can give really good lectures on wine growing. Now that I've taught you all about grapes, I have a pop quiz, because that's what you're supposed to do when you teach people. Okay, real quick, pop quiz. So what do the branches actually have to do to bear fruit? What?
Flower.
What?
Flower.
I'm going to hold your answer for a second. Somebody said something back here.
Prune.
They need to be pruned. But the branch really can't prune itself, can it? Can't really. Somebody said blossom. Well, a branch can't really force itself to blossom, can it? So what did you say?
It has to be connected to the vine.
Yes. It was an easy answer, but it wasn't obvious. You just have to be connected to the vine. If you are a branch and you connect with the vine, the sap, the energy, the power, the grace, it just flows through you and you blossom and you bear fruit. That's the metaphor. It's not how hard you work that gets you to bear fruit. It's how open you are to Christ's Spirit working through you. It's not about how many deeds you do so that you can get into heaven. It's simply about how open are you to the presence of Christ. And this isn't just on an individual basis. This is also on a church basis. Do you want to discover God's grace more in your own personal life? Then just do all you can to just stay attached to Christ and to allow grace to flow through you. Do you want this church to be blessed and be blessed over and over and over again? All you have to do is stay connected to the vine, and grace will flow through, and blessings will happen. Now, I've learned this lesson so many times in my life, and so I wanted to share with you several experiences to me that capture what I'm saying about how grace flows through. With the leadership group on Monday, by Skype, I shared some of these. But I want to share some other stories, just a few stories that to me really capture this idea. I think where I really began to see how being connected to Christ makes a difference was actually back when I was in my early 20s and I had walked away from church. At the time, it was early 1980, and I was working as a therapist in a psychiatric hospital in Virginia. I had a patient, a young man, I was working with adolescents and children, and I was working with a patient who was diagnosed as bipolar, and he was not doing well. The team had met, and we said that if we didn't see an improvement within a week or two, we were going to have to discharge him to a long-term facility because he just wasn't doing well. His thinking was disordered. He was often in a manic state, so he can get agitated at things. At any rate, I was his primary therapist. I would meet with him 5 days a week for an hour each day. And one day I came in to talk to him, and he just seemed clear. I'm not explaining it, but he just seemed clear. And I'm going to call him Norton. I can't tell you what his real name is. But I said to him, so what's going on? You seem like you're doing okay. And he said, well, I have to tell you something, Graham, but you have to promise me you're not going to just tell me it's part of my illness. So being inexperienced, I'm like, okay. And he said, I saw Jesus in the window a few days ago. Well, I already regretted my mistake. You know, Jesus in the window, that's part of his illness. But I promised I wasn't going to do it, so I said, oh. And I did what therapists do when they don't know what to say. I said, tell me more. And he said, I saw Jesus in the window right there. And I said, well, what was Jesus doing? And he said, he was standing there. And I said, well, okay, was he talking to you? He said, no, but he was standing on a path. And he said, behind him on one side were derelicts, people on Skid Row, drunks, all that. He said, on the other path were successful people. And at this point, I didn't really know what to do with the idea of Christ, but I said, well, what do you think Christ is telling you to do? And he said, I think he's telling me I have to make a choice right now. If I keep doing what I'm going to do, I'm going to end up on the path of all the derelicts. But if I decide to really work on my issues, I can be successful. And I said, I think you ought to do what Jesus is telling you. Problem is, I didn't know what to do with Jesus. And I certainly didn't know what to do with Jesus' hallucinations. But then the next week I came in and he was even clearer. And I said, okay, what's going on? And he said, I saw Jesus again. This time I was experienced, so I said, tell me more. And he said, well, it was really weird because it was like Jesus was in the window, but also outside. And I said, well, what was going on? He said, well, we were standing on a football field at the 50-yard line, and there was a chain link fence across the 50-yard line. Jesus was on one side, I was on the other. When I turned around and looked back there was dead grass from the 25-yard line through the end zone, but we were on green grass. And I said, well, gee, what do you think Jesus is trying to tell you? And he said, I think he's told me I've gone from death to life, but I have more obstacles to overcome to get to where he is. And you know what I said to him? I think you ought to do what Jesus is telling you. A week later, we discharged him to home. A year later, I saw his father in a mall, and I asked him how his son was doing, and he said, he's been incredible. He said, I don't know what you all did, but my son is night and day from what he was. We didn't send him back to the boarding school he was in. We sent him to public school. He just graduated, and he's about to go to Virginia Tech with straight A's. I've not been able to follow up on him since then. But basically, what this taught me was, when we are open to Christ, things happen. Two more stories, much shorter. Had another experience when I was in seminary, when I was first interviewing to be an associate pastor. I had graduated from seminary with my Master's of Divinity from Pittsburgh Seminary, my Master's in Social Work from the University of Pittsburgh, and I wanted to be a therapist, but I had this idea, I think God's calling me to be a pastor. So I basically said to God, okay, you have 6 months, and here's what I want. I don't want to work with youth, because I've already worked with youth. I want to be able to explore the area of spirituality. I want to be able to do visitation and counseling. And so I was doing all these interviews and nothing was working out, including one church in this area that's kind of over that direction. It didn't work out well. We don't like that church anymore. Anyway, so I basically was going on an interview in New Kensington, and I was at the 5-month point, and I thought, okay, this means I get to be a therapist. And I had gone to the Pittsburgh Seminary filing thing where you can pick up the church information forms. So I grabbed the one out of there, which I wasn't supposed to do, and being 28, I'm driving on the highway reading about this church where I'm about to interview, except it's not that church. And it's exactly what I was looking for. And it was amazing because I'm going to this church, and it's First Presbyterian Church in Murrysville, and they want an associate pastor to do counseling and pastoral care and explore areas of spirituality. And there was nothing about youth in it. And so as soon as I got home from that interview, I called up, and I ended up interviewing them. And a week later, they offered me the position. A month later, I was working there. The first day, I went out to lunch with the pastor, and the pastor said, "Graham, have we told you how excited we are to have you here?" And I said, "Yeah, this is really great." And he said, "But we have a problem. Our youth program's not doing very well." But what I discovered is, if you're open, things happen. Last thing, one really short story from my church, where I told three stories from my church on Monday. This is a shorter story. I was at Calvin Church long enough and during kind of a time enough that I sort of led them from the Stone Age to the digital age. When I came to Calvin Church, there was nothing digital in the whole place other than a phone system. This was in 1996, so internet really wasn't there, etc. And I had to do a lot of battles. I remember just even talking to our building committee about getting email in the church, and some of the older folks on the building and property committee going, "Why do you need email? Just pick up a phone and call people." Well, it's hard to explain that. But anyway, we got to the point in 2001 where everybody else was developing websites. And so we realized we had to do a website, which we didn't really understand what websites were. And so what we did was what churches back then did. Let's go find a teenager. They understand this. So we found a teenager who said that he wanted to do it. At the time, he was 16 years old. And 6 months later, he had done nothing. He's now in his 30s as a software developer, ironically. But anyway, back then, he did nothing. And so our committee kind of said, "Well, what do we do?" And I said, "You know what? We're trying too hard. God's going to lead us to do a website. Let's just be patient. Something will happen." A week later, I got a call from a member who had just joined a month earlier. And she said, her name was Kathy, and she said, "Graham, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm not working. Since we moved up here from Georgia." And she said, "You know, I'm really interested in websites. I would love to create a website for you all. Would you be willing to allow me to do that?" And I went, "Absolutely." A year later, I get a call from Kathy, and she developed this wonderful website. That's sort of in between. Wonderful website. A year later, I get a call from Kathy, and she said, "I just accepted a new job. I'm working 60 hours a week. I can't do the website anymore." And I said, "Well, you know, Kathy, just do a final version, we'll leave it up there. We waited in prayer for you, someone else will come along." 2 days later, I get a call from Jack Hawbaugh. He calls me up and said, "Graham, I just finished taking a website development course. I would love to help Kathy with the website." And I said to Jack, "Well, what if he just took it over, because she just resigned?" And he said, "Really, can I do that?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely, do whatever you want." That's what happens when you're connected to the vine. God cares even about websites. God even cares about where we're going to go. But it's only when we develop a spirituality that is willing to bear fruit for the world. John's gospel teaches us something crucial to Christian life. If we're willing to stay grafted to the vine, if that becomes the main spiritual work we do, however we do it, through worship, through prayer, through scripture reading, through service, through whatever we do, if we're willing to stay grafted to the vine, grace will naturally flow through us. It will produce fruit. It will produce love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and generosity and faithfulness and gentleness. So the question, just to leave you with this morning, is, are you grafted to the vine? Amen. And amen.